from Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. We begin today's newscast on a sad note. American journalist Serena Shim, a correspondent for Press TV and an occasional contributor to CPR, whose reports from war zones in Ukraine, Syria, and Iraq gave audiences around the world a look behind the lines of fighting that was otherwise missing from Western media, was killed this past weekend in Turkey near the Syrian border, 2 days after she was accused by the Turkish military of being a spy. She was reportedly dead at the scene of an accident when the car she was riding in was rammed by a cement mixer in Urfa province. According to a report from Press TV Monday, Turkey's General Command Gendarme refused to identify the driver of the cement mixer, whose whereabouts remains unknown, and as of press time, there's been no response from Ankara. We have this report from Press TV.
One day after the suspicious death of Press TV's correspondent Serena Shim in Turkey, the gendarmerie still refuses to reveal the identity of the driver involved in that incident. Serena Shim was killed when her car collided with a heavy vehicle in Urfa province on Sunday. Press TV's representative at the crash site says the Turkish gendarmerie refuses to cooperate in the case. There is still no reaction from Ankara or Washington. An American citizen of Lebanese descent, Serena Shim covered many conflict zones around the world, including Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, and Ukraine.
This is the only photo of a suspicious car crash in Turkey's southern Urfa province, which left Press TV's correspondent Serena Shim dead and her camera woman in critical condition. Serena was in the area to cover the raging battles in Syria's besieged Kurdish city of Kobani, which sits just on the other side of the border. Serena, who had already covered the conflicts in Syria, Lebanon, and eastern Ukraine, told Press TV just 2 days before her death that Turkey's intelligence agency was accusing her of spying for Turkish opposition parties.
I'm very surprised at this accusation. I've even thought of actually approaching Turkish intelligence, and because I have nothing to hide and I've never done anything aside from my job, and I'd like to make that apparent to them. However, I am a bit worried.
Serena, who also covered the 2013 Gezi Park protests and the bloody crackdown in Istanbul, had recently exposed links between the Turkish government and the Takfiri militants in Syria. Some experts suggest the accident circumstances and the fact that Serena had received threats just 2 days before her tragic death send a clear message to all journalists across the region.
I think it sends an ominous message to any other independent journalist who might want to cover the situation in Iraq and in Syria, and to have a state like Turkey that's aiding and abetting terrorists in an adjacent sovereign country like Syria.
Reports claim Erdogan.
Serena's friends and colleagues remember her as an active, brave person.
She was dedicated to exposing the truth of wherever she was.
She was a promising journalist. She was very young when I first met her. She was hardworking, serious, courageous.
Serena Shim was an American national of Lebanese origin. The U.S. government is yet to react to the killing of its national in Turkey. Serena's parents have said that they will follow the case through legal channels. Press TV has also made it clear that it will seek justice for its journalist.
We believe that the Turkish government has to be held responsible. Press TV reserves the right, every right, to pursue the matter legally.
Serena Shim is survived by her husband and 2 young children. She will be remembered for her valuable work and what she stood for.
Let's now talk about Serena's untimely death a bit further. We're now joined by Kevork Elmasyan, who is a political commentator and is joining us live now from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. And Elmasyan, Mr. Elmasyan, I'm wondering, you know, there are a lot of suspicions around how her death happened, and we're now getting news, of course, that Turkish police are refusing to even release the name of the driver involved in this incident. How do you read the situation as it stands right now?
First of all, I want to express my deepest condolences to Serena Shim's family, our sister family, and her bigger family, Press TV. I believe her death is really—it's similar to what happened to the journalist Hrant Dink few years ago in Turkey, when he was also assassinated by unknown crazy man who assassinated him because of speaking truth also about the Armenian genocide. Serena Shim was a very brave journalist. I know her through phone calls. We had also phone calls to report about the situation in the Syrian Turkish borders. She was revealing many reports that annoyed the Turkish government and especially President Erdogan. She revealed the intervention of the Turkish government in the town of Kobani and how they facilitated the entrance of IS, the so-called Islamic State terrorists, from the Turkish borders into Syria while they're driving trucks carrying the banners of the World Food Organization and other NGOs. These truths were not reported by many mainstream media, but Press TV journalist and correspondent Serena Shim was revealing these truths to the public opinion about the involvement of the Turkish government in this brutal war in Kobani, that also the government of Turkey, its strategic interest is not to eliminate the Islamic State threat on its borders, but to eliminate the existence of the Kurdish presence on the borders with Turkey. Now, if you read the statements of Erdogan, he says that he will not go into direct war against the Islamic State before there is a clear condition to also overthrow President Bashar al-Assad. So his conditioned entrance into this war is raising a lot of questions that the Turkey is not interested to fight IS, which has with this organization direct contacts that also feed the tens of diplomats and citizens of Turkey. We all know that the IS is brutal enough to slaughter all the foreigners, then the journalists, and they accuse them of spying, but only the Turkish citizens were freed. Now, in the case of Serena Shim, I believe the government of Turkey should held responsible for this and should reveal the name of the truck owner and the driver. But we will hear in the near future, in the coming days, a lot of fabrications and maybe a lot of videos and pictures that reveal that says that the Serena Shim accident was a spontaneous accident by a truck who was fast, or their driver was also fast. So we have to be ready to counter this propaganda war, which will be launched very soon by the Turkish government and the media agencies, especially in the Western countries, to launch against Serena Shim and accuse her of being a conspiracy theorist and to be a spy for the Iranian government or other stuff.
Mr. Al-Masian, I want to ask you about that. In fact, the Western countries, I'm glad you mentioned that, because, you know, Serena was an American citizen. And it is surprising, is it not, that we have not even gotten one statement yet out of any American agency? Because, you know, if this had happened anywhere else in the world, if this were any other American who had been killed, the Western media would have been going crazy over this, I would imagine.
This is the double standard of the American administration in the whole Middle East. Its policies depends on what Serena Shim was doing on the borders. If she was serving the interests of the Americans, the White House would have stated now a very strong statement against the Turkish government. But as long as Serena Shim was revealing the truth of the involvement of the American allies in the Middle East against the against its neighbors, namely Syria and Iraq, the White House now will give a very low profile statement. I believe in the coming hours they will say that they are waiting a further investigation by the Turkish government, which is not reliable at all. We all know that the Turkish intelligence agency has already accused Serena Shim of being a spy and also accused her, threatened her life only 2 days before her death. So any logical person who is doing an investigation in the journalist field will point its finger to the Turkish government, and also for this whole war, the so-called against terrorism in the Middle East. that is bearing the life of thousands of people in the name of fighting the terrorism. But as I said, the White House will give a very short and very low-profile statement, and it will say that we are waiting for further investigation by the Turkish government, and no further steps will be taken by the American administration to reveal the truth of her death.
Shim's family members say they don't believe that their daughter died in an accident. Although they refused to appear on camera, her parents said they suspected the Turkish authorities were responsible for their daughter's death and said they would pursue the matter legally. An American citizen of Lebanese descent, Serena Shim covered many conflict zones around the world, including Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, and Ukraine. Her reports had been carried here on CPR News. She was traveling on the Turkish side of the border across from Syria's strategic town of Kobani to cover the fighting there between ISIL and Kurdish and Syrian fighters. Her car was struck by the cement mixer upon her return from reporting at the scene in Suruk, a rural district of the Sanliurfa province of Turkey. Shim was among the few journalists who reported about the infiltration into Syria across the Turkish border by ISIL and related terrorist groups, and had gained access to video and photo images showing the fighters crossing the border in trucks belonging to the World Food Organization and other NGOs. Again, the family of Serena Shim doubts that her death was an accident, and we'll have more on that later in this newscast. The World Health Organization said Nigeria appears to be free of Ebola, and it gave Cuba high marks for its role in fighting the virus in Africa. Jocelyn Sambira reports.
Cuba's being praised for sending more doctors and nurses to help fight the Ebola pandemic in West Africa. Margaret Chan, the Director General of the World Health Organization, spoke via video conference to delegates attending a summit of a regional group of Latin American and Caribbean countries on Ebola. The aim of the meeting in Havana, Cuba, is to define who will contribute what to resolving this complex emergency as well as stopping the spread of the virus.
I must begin by thanking the Cuban government for giving the Ebola outbreak response so many highly experienced Cuban doctors and nurses. I have seen the many news photographs of these staff in their sparkling white lab jackets ready to help. This brings a most welcome phase of hope to what is otherwise a horrific outbreak.
Earlier in October, a team of 165 Cuban medical doctors and nurses were sent to Sierra Leone. Ms. Chan has also confirmed that Nigeria is now free of Ebola after reporting no new cases for 42 days. Jocelyn Sambira, United Nations.
Hong Kong Chief Police Superintendent Steve Hui said Monday that troublemakers embedded with students in the city's ongoing demonstrations have verbally abused officers and physically attacked them with umbrellas and crowd control barriers. He said the situation in Mong Kok is spinning out of control and is on the verge of turning into a riot.
The violent charging acts in Mong Kok are in total contradiction of the proclaimed principle of peaceful and nonviolence. In the past few days, some radical protesters and troublemakers who mixed with the protesters in Mong Kok area jailed and scolded police, attacked them with umbrellas, snatched away meal barriers, and even filled the barriers at the police. The media and public figures have pointed out that the situation in Mong Kok is spinning out of control and on the verge of turning into a riot. I appeal to the protesters in the unlawful assembly, especially to students, for the sake of your personal safety and public order, stay away from the dangerous areas in Mong Kok. Most importantly, we don't want to see students injured when radical protesters and troublemakers charge police cordoned. As a final note, I urge all radical protesters to stop all illegal and radical acts endangering public safety and public order.
Meanwhile, on Sunday, the city's chief executive, Leung Chun Ying, said that the central government has full confidence in him and the Hong Kong government to handle the protests, which he said are not entirely a product of domestic political activity.
Hong Kong is a very transparent society, and the central government, including the National People's Congress, which handed down the August decision are very much on top of the situation, and they're fully aware of what's happening in Hong Kong and the reasons behind the events that we are seeing. They've expressed serious concern, and it is no secret. There have been so many articles and commentaries and reports in, for example, the People's Daily and CCTV, so we can all read about it. And they have expressed a serious concern about the situation in Hong Kong, but all, at the same time, they've expressed full confidence in myself and in the Hong Kong SAR government to tackle the situation.
Okay.
Now, Hong Kong has been fortunate so far for the Hong Kong SAR government, and myself included, to have such high level of confidence
and support.
Leung said he realizes it will take time to work out a solution to the problems facing the city, and that he wants to see the affair come to a peaceful and meaningful end. The family of Serena Shim killed over the weekend when a cement mixer rammed the passenger car she was riding in, doubts that her death was an accident. We have these reports from Press TV.
Now, family members of Press TV correspondent Serena Shim, who's been killed in southern Turkey near Syria, say they doubt her death was a normal car accident. Serena's family made the remarks during a visit by the News Network's Beirut Bureau team. They refused to give statements on camera, but they said that they suspected the Turkish authorities were somehow responsible for her death. Serena's parents also said they would legally pursue the matter.
Press TV's correspondent Serena Shim has been killed in southern Turkey near the Syrian border. Serena was killed in a car accident when she was returning from a report scene in the city of Suruç in Turkey's Urfa province. She was going back to her hotel in Urfa when a car collided with a heavy vehicle. On Friday, Serena told Press TV that a Turkish intelligence agency has threatened and accused her of spying, and she feared she may be arrested.
I'm very surprised at this accusation. I've even thought of actually approaching Turkish intelligence, and because I have nothing to hide and I've never done anything aside from my job, and I'd like to make that apparent to them. However, I am a bit worried because, as you know, and as the viewers know, that Turkey has been labeled by Reporters Without Borders as the largest prison for journalists. So I am a bit frightened about what they might use against me. We were some of the first people on the ground, if not the first people, to get that story of those Tekfiri militants going in through the Turkish border from the Beyb el-Hawa Rihanli border, being sent in. I got images of them in World Food Organization trucks. It was very apparent that they were Tekfiri militants by their beards and by the clothes that they wore, and they were going in there with NGO trucks. And I just find it very odd. They went to several local residents here, asked about me. The residents said, no, we know her. We have seen her before. We've seen her work. She's not a spy. And they were blatant on going through with the fact that, no, yes, I actually am. And that they told any people that if they see me, to bring me in.
Serena was reporting from the Turkish border near Kobani. She said the accusations might be due to her coverage of Turkey's stance on ISIL's atrocities in Kobani and the recent protests in Turkey.
Kurdish fighters have appealed to fellow Kurds in Iraq to send reinforcements as Turkey refuses to allow Kurds to cross the border and join them in defending the city. Eyewitness reports say the ISIL terrorists keep beheading, raping, and torturing civilians. This man, who just came from Kobani, has witnessed the accounts firsthand.
They believe if they push our cart, they will go to heaven. This is all because of Turkey.
Kurds here have made several attempts to try and take in humanitarian aid to the besieged city of Kobani, but the Turkish army is lined up across the border, not letting anyone in. They also warn to shoot any people who attempt to go further.
Serena Shim covered reports for Press TV in Lebanon, Iraq, Ukraine, and during Turkey's Gezi Park protests in 2013. She was married and had two children.
Journalists face a number of obstacles to their work when they're trying to report stories that the powerful don't want the rest of us to hear. Here in the U.S., the war on journalists continues, even if the weapons of war are a bit more subtle than a cement truck. Last week, Pennsylvania lawmakers approved a bill authorizing prison officials to censor public communications from prisoners or former offenders if a judge decides that the speech would cause mental anguish to the victim. The measure was apparently targeting imprisoned journalist Mumia Abu-Jamal after he delivered a pre-taped commencement address for graduating students at Vermont's Goddard College earlier this month. Abu-Jamal's speech was opposed by Pennsylvania state officials and the widow of Daniel Faulkner, the police officer whom Jamal was accused of killing. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett said he would sign the bill, which allows the state's attorney general, local district attorneys, and crime victims to go to court to stop the release of prisoner statements that perpetuate, quote, the continuing effect of crime on the victim, closed quote. The American Civil Liberties Union of Pennsylvania has criticized the measure, calling it unable to pass constitutional muster under the First Amendment. Noel Hanrahan is director of Prison Radio and produces Mumia's work, which you hear often here on CPR News. She spoke with FSRN's Nell Abram last week to discuss the Pennsylvania bill.
First, this bill is framed as one that's intended to protect victims of violent crimes. What's wrong with that?
Victims are being used as a tactic by the Fraternal Order of Police to silence voices that politicians and the Fraternal Order of Police don't want to be present in the public debate and dialogue on the criminal justice system.
Does the proposed law only apply to people who are incarcerated?
It also applies to people who have finished their incarceration but are still under correctional control. So it would apply to a wide range of people in the United States. I think we really have to frame it in a different way. This isn't, in fact, about the experience of people who are victims of violent crime. Many people in prison are already victims of violent crime. Those who are in prison who are innocent are victims of violent crime. People don't lose their constitutional rights when they go into prison. The greater import for free speech issues and First Amendment issues is the fact that we are a criminogenic nation. We are a culture that creates crime. We have the highest imprisonment population in the world, and the conditions of confinement affect everyone, regardless of prison walls. So healthcare in prison, the fact that we choose to spend money on prisons versus preschools, that we spend more per capita than any culture on earth, that is a defining thing for everyone. As journalists, as a journalist who records prisoners, we need those voices from inside. This is an attempt by politicians and the Fraternal Order of Police to warehouse those voices and keep them from the public debate. This is a crucial issue for our culture at this point. It's really a defining issue. We need to understand what the culture of incarceration is doing to the culture, and we can only do that with first-person voices from people inside.
When the bill was introduced, one Pennsylvania representative, Rosemary Brown, specifically inquired about how the law, if passed, could apply to anyone who facilitates communication between the person incarcerated and a public audience. Would this bill potentially affect producers like you and even media outlets who seek to balance news reports by including the voices of the huge U.S. population living behind bars?
This affects every single reporter and every single person who accepts a phone call and then plays that message back in public. People in prison do not lose their First Amendment rights. They don't lose many of their rights. They're still protected under the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. These are very important things to defend, because once they're taken away from some of us, they are in fact taken away from all of us.
This bill would preemptively block free speech, assuming intent and effect. And the Supreme Court has already ruled on the collateral emotional effects of free speech when they upheld the rights of Westboro Baptist Church and its leader, Fred Phelps, to hold vicious homophobic protests outside military funerals. Could this measure pass constitutional muster?
Absolutely not. It's very likely that it will be defeated. But the cost to both our First Amendment rights during the process of its defeat will be extreme. This bill will pass the Pennsylvania State House and Senate. It will be signed into law by Governor Tom Corbett. And if they're successful in implementing it very quickly, a judge within Pennsylvania can issue an injunction and stop reporters from having access to inmates. So this could come quickly. We probably have to file a lawsuit preemptively to stop it from its implementation. Otherwise, we're looking at losing speech until we can get through the court system. And the Pennsylvania court system and the federal court system are, in fact, very anti-prisoner. It could take a long time and we will lose a lot of ground.
Wednesday is a day of action about the proposed bill. Tell us what's happening in the state capitol.
Two busloads of people are going up to the Capitol. They're meeting with legislators on the floor of the Pennsylvania State and House, and they are making their points known that they are people who are very concerned about prisoners' First Amendment rights not being silenced. We've had hundreds and hundreds of calls all day yesterday and today into the State House to try and impress upon the legislatures that people really will come out for this. Right now, the Pennsylvania State and Senate and House are controlled by the Republicans, so it's very likely that this will pass if it reaches the floor. Today is the last day of our session in Pennsylvania, so it may not reach the floor if cooler heads prevail. That doesn't mean it's going away. It may be well brought back in the next session.
Noel Hanrahan is director of Prison Radio, based in both San Francisco and Philadelphia. More information is online at prisonradio.org. For Free Speech Radio News, I'm Nell Abram.
Monday marked the third anniversary of the murder of Muammar Gaddafi by U.S.-backed terrorists after his caravan was bombed in three separate raids by U.S. and French air forces. Gaddafi was the leader of Libya's 1969 Bloodless Revolution, which took the country's 6 million people from suffering under abject poverty the comfortable life in one of the most prosperous countries in Africa by nationalizing the country's oil and using the money to develop housing, schools, hospitals, and other public infrastructure. We mark this date with this tribute by Black Rasta to the man the people of Libya called Brother Leader.
All right, this is a special one. All right? Vampires, hypocrites, and parasites. Uruguay! Rest in peace, Muammar al-Gaddafi, my hero. I cry.
Gaddafi is gone. Oh no.
He was my brother, my father, and my friend.
Oh, why Gaddafi?
So tell me why, and how, and who.
Oh, why Gaddafi?
He was a man so strong and bold.
Oh, why Gaddafi?
So Bismillah, Rahman, Rahim.
Oh, why Gaddafi?
They were the best of friends, Zapateri, Berlusconi, and Sarkozy of France. Eat, dine, and boonga boonga, and flock together, they did like birds. Handshakes of treachery, hypocrisy, and jealousy soon flooded the press. Popular uprising in Tunisia, Syria, and Egypt rustled the nest. They planted rats and cockroaches to rebel against Gaddafi and cause a blunderous historical mess. In a twinkle of an eye, the eating, the dining, and the boonga boonga must be suppressed. And the best put together to rest, having been replaced by drones from America, Italy, France, and the rest. Huh. What a shame! It's a shame! A big shame! Shame. Yes, while the toothless bulldog of an African Union sat and watched so powerlessly, Libya was ransacked by mafias and ninjas so vehemently. What was his crime? He wanted the African currency for his oil. He wanted to pay the price. He was slaughtered like a dog on his own soil. He rejected the Arab League and flocked with his African identity. He regretted his past and wanted to see Africa in total sanity. Muammar al-Gaddafi was a threat to Western hypocritical capitalists. Free food, shelter, healthcare, and education he gave to his people as a champion of all African socialists.
I cry. Gaddafi is
tell me who killed Gaddafi? Who pulled the trigger? Tell me who killed Gaddafi? Who pulled the trigger? Tell me who killed Gaddafi? Two wrongs don't make no right. Nation, no right again.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.